Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the October 2023 Fall Family Retreat held in Pipestem, West Virginia.
Hey, thank you for being here. And I would just add to remember to pick up your children and to remember the dance tonight. Excited about that. Has this been an amazing day so far? Yes? Again, I'm so impressed with the LDSHE board, presidents, treasurers, everybody that comes together to put these wonderful things together. Just takes an enormous amount of effort, and we are all benefactors of that. So just so grateful to all that's happened. This venue is amazing too. Just absolutely a beautiful time to be here. I believe that what you get is oftentimes not what I'm even saying. What you hear oftentimes does not have anything to do with what I'm saying. That's inspiration. It's not what I'm telling you. It's what you are telling you and what the Lord is telling you. And I would just ask you to pay attention to that, especially during this talk. What is the Lord speaking to you? And write it down. Write down your inspirations. When we write down our inspirations, I believe we get many more of them. When we don't, I believe they go away. Have you ever had a brilliant idea, like change the world idea at 7 in the morning, and by 11 a.m. it was gone, right? Because you didn't write down, I was supposed to change the world today. It was something, right? But you know, let's just take it a step further. Let's not make this a guessing game. Let's make this reality. I'm going to give you a minute. We're going to take a moment of silence, and I want you to say a personal prayer. And in that personal prayer, here's what I'll ask that you ask. One, that you'll receive what the Lord has prepared for you. And number two, that you'll receive it, that you'll accept it. Receive what the Lord has prepared for you. And number two, that you'll accept it. Go ahead and say that personal prayer right now. Fantastic. So we just took the guesswork out of it. You will receive what you're supposed to receive from this. And I'm grateful to the Lord for that. So the language of love. The language of love in so many aspects. How we help people feel in our own lives, including ourselves. I already mentioned my family, my daughters. Here's a picture of us in Georgia recently. So there's my family. There's a picture of us in Georgia. And we've homeschooled. That's all our children know. We've always homeschooled our children. And with a lot of homeschooling projects and things like that, let me share one of those with you. My daughter, Charity, when she was six, she came in to my home office where we were living at the time in Virginia. And she said, Dad, I made something for you. I said, okay, great. And I said, what is it? And she said, this. This is what I made. Right there, that fancy thing. And I said, thank you, sweetheart, that looks beautiful. I didn't know what it was necessarily, and I think she understood that I didn't know what it was. I said, sweetheart, what is that? She says, she looks at me like I don't know anything. She says, Dad, duh, it's a toe ring. And I know you can see that in the back, it's so big, right? And I said, thank you for that toe ring. So I don't have a toe ring, now I have one, and super excited about it. And I sat on the desk and I went back to work, and she didn't move. She wanted me to try this thing on. So I took off my shoe, I took off my sock, I put that on the most logical toe you can think of. And I said, what do you think, sweetheart? And she got a real concerned look on her face, 6 years old, okay? And she says, oh, Dad, it looks kind of big. And I said, well, what should we do? And then she got this real confident look on her face, and she smacks me on the back, and she said, don't worry, Dad, you'll grow into it. I'm still working on it. I'm drinking all sorts of toe-growing vegetable juice and stuff like that. But that's precious to me. I've told that story literally all over the world. I keep it in a special case. And how's the saying go? You cherish the small things because one day they become the big things, right? And in homeschooling, we have a lot of things to cherish. All these things, all these little lessons that wouldn't have come if our children weren't in our care at that time. Cherish all those things. Well, You know, language is an interesting thing. Here's a phrase that I think will resonate with you. Language is the window into which you see life. What you say determines what you see. I mentioned it earlier. You don't get life what you deserve. You get what you expect. And I can tell a person's expectations by what you say. And so, what is the window of your life? And I can tell just, again, by how people speak. What is going on? And so, to talk more about this, there's lessons that I've learned, just like you, in all many aspects of our life. And I'm going to go back to a time in my wife and I's life when I learned many aspects of the language of love. And it was in the pizza business. So there's a few lessons that we learned from the pizza business. It's probably not what you were expecting. But when we first got married, we wanted to be entrepreneurs. And we couldn't even spell entrepreneur, but we wanted to be one. And nonetheless, one of our first businesses was the pizza business. And let me get specific. This was an all-you-can-eat pizza, pasta, garlic, bread, dessert, pizza, and salad business for $2.99. Yeah, it was really... We learned a lot of lessons from them. One is that we'll never do that again. And but it was a wonderful business nonetheless. So here is one of the lessons we learned. See, I was 22, I believe. Kimberly was 21 at the time. So early in our marriage, we learned the semantics of the pizza business that I remember the day when the previous manager and owner were about to leave. And they were about to turn it over to us. And I said, please, are there any last pieces of advice you could give me before you, turn the restaurant over to us? And they said, sure. You see the girl out there cooking right now. We were in the office and we looked out and saw a girl cooking. I said, okay. They said, her name is Tanya. I said, all right. They said, go ahead and fire Tanya. And everything's going to be great in the pizza business. And I thought, why would I fire Tanya? Oh, they had a whole list. She's always late. Always. Never smiles. Never? Never even attempts to look pretty. Never combs her hair or anything like that. She's got a bad attitude. Fire Tanya. And everything's going to be great in the pizza business. And that was their advice. And then they were gone. What would you do with such a thing? Well, I believe I was blessed in my life with a thing called a flip filter. My mother has a great flip filter. In many cases, she can take a negative and flip it into a positive. Like she'll hear a negative and then it goes flip into a positive. I don't know why I'm using that tone, but nonetheless, it goes into a positive. So when it comes out of her mouth, it seems to be positive. And I believe I was blessed with that. So I was hearing this negative and I was going to flip it into a positive. The other thing I learned is that people tend to act how you speak to them. People tend to act how you speak to them. Do you believe that? Isn't that basic knowledge? And then I add some weight to it, and about them when they are not present. People tend to act how you speak to them and about them when they're not present. I feel like Tanya had just been acting accordingly. If she'd been spoken to negatively, she'll act accordingly. So let me just spend a moment on this phrase here as it's coming to me. How do you speak about your children? Is it in a way that you want them to act? I was speaking at a college, and I'd given the workshop, couple-hour workshop, really the deeper dive. And I was signing books afterwards, and there was a gentleman there whose daughter was going to be attending the college but was not able to be there, and he was getting a book for her. And I said, hey, sir, who should I make the book out to? And he says, Jessica. I said, okay. I said, who's Jessica? He said, oh, she's my daughter, and she's going to be the death of me. I just gave this two-hour talk on language. I'm like, was he even in the room? Right? And he's getting this book for her. I thought, she needs this book. I know she's going to be the death of me. And I wrote to Jessica, and I said, Jessica, you're divine. You're loved. You're worthy of greatness. Speak well. I said, that's for Jessica. And I said to the people that were with me, my brother was with me, I said, hey, give me another book for this gentleman. He said, no, I just want one book. I said, this one's on the house. What's your name, sir? John. I said, John, remember, people tend to act how you speak to them and about them when they're not present. There you go, John. Well, with Tanya, I went up to Tanya, and there she was cooking, and I said, look, Tanya, I'm the new guy here. You're not going to believe what that previous manager and owner just told me about you. She was terrified to think that if anything came out of their lips, it wasn't going to be what?
good or positive. She was terrified. And I said, no, you have the wrong idea. In fact, when I said that, she had her apron on. She started walking backwards. She started taking off her apron as if to think she was going to get fired, especially if I spoke to them. And I said to Tanya, here's how I heard it. What? They told me if anybody could run this restaurant, it was you. She was skeptical. And I said, Tanya, they said you've been here the longest. Is that true? She says, I have been here the longest. And I said, Tanya, will you help me? It's not what she was expecting. Those words, will you help me? That's the language of love right there. What does it do? It put me in a state immediately of humility and put her in a state of expertise. It's the last thing she probably expected out of a leader or a manager or owner of a restaurant. Will you help me? And she recognized, oh, he must think I'm valuable. I said, I've never done this before. I'm going to need all the help I can get. In fact, I don't know why it hasn't happened already. You've been here the longest. I can see you becoming one of my shift managers. She said, me? A shift manager? I said, absolutely. When she put her apron back on her face was painted a smile. They said she never smiled. That was wrong. I said, come tomorrow morning, we'll talk about it. Guess who showed up early? They said she was always late. Hair combed, stuff on her face, looked beautiful. Tanya became a shift manager. People tend to act how you speak to them. She became a positive, powerful force in the restaurant. Well, here's another language of love. Taking time to get to know people's story. Now, take is an action word. Take time. When you do that, I believe that when you take time to get to know people's story, you tend to love and appreciate them a whole lot more. So when Tanya had a break, we went out and had pizza, pasta, garlic, and dessert, pizza, salad together, of course, and I said, here's a wonderful question. I said, Tanya, tell me what's great about you. It's more than just, hey, how are you? Tell me what's great about you. What does that do? I just opened up my heart and said, you have space now. That's a language of love. And it creates trust. Is trust important? Would you say trust is important? Anybody? Right? How important is trust these days? You. So let me just distinguish love and trust. Love and trust. I was serving in my mission in Cali, Colombia, and we had a visiting apostle. His name was Elder Russell M. Nelson. At the time, now he's the prophet. And he's in front of all of us missionaries, and here's what he said to us. He says, elders, sisters, let me be clear on something. God loves everybody. However, he doesn't trust everybody. You see, to be worthy of trust is much higher than to be worthy to be loved. That came from him. I pinned it this way. Look, to be loved is commonplace. To be trusted is in an exalted league of its own. Wouldn't you agree? Let me prove the point. How many of you have people in your life that you love by a show of hands? Well, hopefully we see all the... Keep them up. Come on. Hey, raise your hand. You have people in your life that you love. Very good. Keep your hands raised high and mighty if you do business with every single one of those people. We're losing them. Okay, one's holding on strongly. Okay, good. That's about the numbers across the world. That's the numbers in Australia. That's the numbers in Jakarta, Indonesia, in Tanzania. Do you understand? That's the same. Love is not equal to trust. Are we taking an effort to build up trust with people? That's a language of love. So, I said, Tanya, tell me what's great about you. I was surprised at her answer because she said nothing. Oh, come on, Tanya. No, she said nothing. And I can recognize she was going to open her heart a little bit more. You see, here, let me put a visual on this. When I open my heart and give them space to talk, and I can recognize she was opening her heart, she's about to share something, she shares something with her, and I have it, and I hold it in my special chamber, just like that, and that's trust. She said, now she was 26 at the time, and she said, when I was 4, how old?
4.
I was dropped off by my mother at an unstable uncle's house. She said, Thomas, I've never seen my mother again. I don't even know if she's alive or not. Think about a girl going 22 years of her life, not knowing if her mother was around or not. That uncle was very abusive to her in every sense of the word, if you can imagine. And she said, he wasn't nice to me. I couldn't wait to get out of that house. Are you starting to see why Tanya didn't smile? You know, you're starting to see why Tanya didn't care whether she was pretty or not. But those previous leaders didn't take the time to get to know her story. But that's what she was wearing every day. But do you know people's story? Or we just assume they're a negative person. Right? They've got a bad attitude. Boy, something's always a chip on their shoulder. But if you take the time to sit down with them, you'll learn why. Take a minute to walk in people's shoes. That's love. Just a minute. And with our children, going out and having different experiences, whatever, take a minute to walk in their shoes. How was your evening? How was your day? How was your experience? Well, she said, I have a 2-year-old son. And I said, well, that's great, Tanya. She said, not so great. I haven't seen that boy in 18 months due to some unfortunate circumstances. Think about a mother. Hasn't seen their baby in 18 months. Are you just starting to see why she just, life was what it was for her? But nobody knew this. But then I came along and just spoke a little bit of love and kindness into her. I believe in you, Tanya. So here's, and then she became my shift manager. And have you ever given somebody a compliment and you can actually see them physically, their countenance gets brighter? You ever seen this? Here's what I believe is happening. Here's just my way to explain around it. I believe that when we're born, we're branded. We're branded with an invisible sign on our chest that says this: I am loved, I am divine, I am worthy of greatness. Now, wouldn't you believe that's how we come to this earth? We know whose we are. We are loved, we are divine, we are worthy of greatness. We show up this way. And then with life's experiences, what happens is this sign gets brighter and brighter if they're positive, or it gets diminished and covered up if life's negative. In Tanya's case, you couldn't see her sign because it was covered with abuse, resentment. I'm ugly. Nobody wants me. All these things were covering who she really was. But then I came and spoke love and kindness into her. And it's as if I could see a letter fall off and another letter fall off. And all of a sudden there was her sign. I am loved, I'm divine, I'm worthy of greatness. There you are. And she became who she was exactly meant to be. What's the key? What's the key? You go around and you shine people's signs. You just shine their sign by speaking love and kindness to them. Speaking love and kindness to them. And they'll become brighter and brighter. More valuable and more valuable. Right? People tend to act how you speak to them and about them when they're not present. So if you find yourself speaking about, let's just say, a child, that one's good, that one's good, not sure about that one's great, right? Is that how you want them to be? And so let me give you a couple of filters, because if you were there this morning when I talked about language and changing your language and changing your results, here's a few filters, because people say, well, Thomas, where am I supposed to go with this? I said one phrase: only say the things you actually want to happen. Number two, another accountability piece is I captain. Let me tell you what I mean by that. If somebody says something negative about themselves or others, I would just say, is that what you want to happen? If so, keep going. If not, change it. Right? It's going to be a terrible day. Nothing's going to work out for us. Is that what you want to happen? No. What do you want to happen? I want it to be a great day and everything to work out for us. Then say that. Because the crew says, I captain either way. So I have people and companies and organizations and they'll just go around with each other. That's why the I captain, because somebody will say something negative, right? It's just sales are so tough, right? Raising kids is just so tough these days. I just say, I captain, because they're going to make that happen for you. And it's a way to call each other out. So in your families, it's a way to hold each other accountable. If they're saying something that they don't want, just say, aye, captain, is that what you want? No, then what do you want? Then say that. Get them to change it. But there has to be accountability, or this will slip. Right? And that's why I have people get on those weekly tips, because every Monday I can give you a new scenario, 101 of them. A new scenarios, new thoughts. So this just isn't the flavor of the weekend type thing. So, another lesson from the pizza business. We did not have the highest quality of pizza. It was $2.99. What do you expect? You remember, it was Eats a Pizza. You probably went there. Gilbert and Southern, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. You probably owe me money. You probably have more than you should. So there we were, but we made the normal types of pizzas, but then we wanted people to feel special, and so people would come in and tell us their types of pizza, and we would make it for them. And there was one gentleman that came in every Thursday at 3 o'clock. When did he come in? Right. What does a restaurant look like Thursday at 3 o'clock? Did you say dead? We're talking about words today. Right. Can we not kill the restaurant? We're just getting started. She just killed the restaurant. Can we say it's not busy? Okay, thank you. Right, yeah. It's right. It's a downtime.
Full of possibilities.
They're full of possibilities. Good, you're getting the idea. So, it was not busy. So, you know, bosses, we don't have to be there Thursday at 3 o'clock too because we're running errands, right? It's our time to go do some things. But I came in every Thursday at 3 o'clock because there was a gentleman that came in Thursday at 3 o'clock and his name was Bob. Bob liked a certain type of pizza. What type of pizza did Bob like? Y'all are brilliant. Wonderful. So, good old Bob. Bob liked beef and onion. Thursday at 3 o'clock. Our dining room was about the size of this room, maybe a little bit bigger, and the cash register was up there, and they had a few windows in the back, and I could see Bob coming from a long ways away because he walked so slow. He just had a stroke, and the doctor begged him to get into a wheelchair. But he was a prideful man, so he took his cane and he walked. I'm probably walking too fast, but this is about how fast it was. And he'd finally get to the door, and he was prideful. Nobody could help him, and he'd open up that door, and I would just sit there and I'd wait. I'd yell at the top of my lungs. The moment he came, I'm, Bob! I've got your beef and onion in the oven. You go take a seat. I'll bring you some slices. I think people start showing up Thursday at 3 o'clock just to hear me say that. Right? Bob! Well, he would do the same thing. He would make eye contact with me. He'd hold his cane in his hand, and he'd point at me, and he'd wave like this. And he'd start walking to his seat. I knew I had time to get pizza in that pizza in the oven, you know what I mean? Plenty of time. So he finally get over to his seat. He sat in the exact same seat every single week. Aren't we interesting as humans? Exact same seat. And I knew exactly how many slices he liked. Like a little extra crispy. And I'd bring them out to him. And interesting enough, he'd put his hand up on my shoulder and he'd call me Tommy. That's fine. He said, hey, Tommy. You didn't have to bring that to me. I'd have got up and got it myself. He wasn't going to get up. It had taken him 2 weeks to get to that buffet. You know what I mean? But how would you have received that? Right? Is it when I squeeze you a little bit, when I squeeze you, what comes out? Love or animosity or hatred? How would you receive that? Doesn't Bob know I don't serve anybody else their pizza? Like, has anybody ever been to a buffet restaurant and an owner of the restaurant, whatever, comes out and gives you the food? Anybody? Right? He was the only guy. Doesn't Bob know I don't have to be there Thursday at 3 o'clock, that I come just for him? And he has the gall to say, I'd have got up and got it myself? How would you receive that? Well, to me, he was saying, thank you, Tommy. That's what he was saying. Right? Thank you, Tommy. So I said, you're welcome, Bob. Happy to do it. And I just didn't stop there. I sat down and got to know Bob's what? His story. You see, I learned that Bob served our country, and I thanked him for that. And if any of you have served our country, thank you to you. I learned that Bob had some kids that he was real proud of, and some kids that stressed him out, right? And we just talked, and we just talked. And I noticed Bob would say the same thing to me when he left. He would say, Tommy, this is the best part of my week. This is the highlight of my week. And I thought, really? And he was serious because he came every week. He came every month, right? He just kept going. So I started saying it too because I thought, you know, it was a fun part of my week too. I said, Bob, me too. This is a highlight of my week too. And they would go away and then he'd come back next Thursday. This went on and on, faithful. And then one Thursday, 3 o'clock, he didn't come. And I didn't think much of it. I just went on with my day. Anything could have happened. He'd never miss. And this was, you know, over 20 years ago. He didn't call or didn't, he never called. We didn't have a lot of cell phones going on at that time. And so I just went on with my day. The very next day, we opened up our doors at 11 a.m., and I remember going and opening up to the public at 11 a.m., and as I opened up, there was a lady standing there, and it was Bob's wife, Linda. And I could tell something wasn't right. I said, Linda, how you doing? What's going on? She said, I'm here to tell you sorry Bob didn't come in yesterday. I said, Linda, you're a sweetheart. You didn't have to come and tell me that. She said, I did. It's one of the last things Bob said before he passed away. I was honored. I thought, I was on Bob's mind. before he passed away?
He said, go tell Tommy I'm not going to make it in today.
I said, I'm honored you would come. I'm so sorry for your loss. Is there anything we can do
for you? She says, there's one more request he made. He said, go tell Tommy I want him to carry me at my funeral.
I said, Linda, you want me to be a pallbearer for that man? I am the pizza guy. I'm the pizza guy. And there was a table right there. And I remember because she smacked that table as if to crack my stinking thinking. And she said, hold on right there, Tommy. You didn't know this? You were one of Bob's dearest friends? You didn't know that nobody could get on Bob's calendar Thursday at 3 o'clock? Nobody. He would say, I'm going to see Tommy. Right? Well, the thing is, I know who Tommy is, but nobody else does. You're coming to that funeral because you got to bring closure to the whole family who this Tommy is. I said, yes, ma'am.
Opportunity.
Yeah. So I did go to Bob's funeral, and I remember carrying that casket with some other wonderful people. And in honor of Bob, we walked this fast with that casket. All because of some beef and onion. All because of some beef and onion. That Bob was so sneaky, you know that? He never paid me. He never paid me that $2.99. Think of all that $3 I lost. Like, I could be in Europe right now with all that $3, right? Well, I think you got the point already. Was it ever about the money? You think I was showing up Thursday for the money, right? And whatever aspect that means to you, can you get beyond that? And maybe you already are, but can you just get beyond that financial aspect? There was a priesthood session when he was the first counselor at the time of the first presidency, but Thomas S. Monson said this. He said, men will work hard for money, but they'll work harder for another person or another culture. But they'll work the hardest of all for a cause they believe in. Money, another person, cause is the highest one. And obviously there was a cause there. But can you get beyond that and beyond the money? And so I've thought about this for years of what's my cause, what's my purpose? Can you take a cause, a purpose, and put it in the center and wrap it around everything you do? Can you have a cause in homeschooling? Do your kids know what the purpose is? Do they know what's the deeper thing? Or is it just to get through an education? Is a book just a book to get through a book? Or what's the purpose? What do we want to gain? What's the vision really of it? With that, there'll be all this extra effort put into it, but taking time to explain that. My cause has come over time, but I recognize it's also been developed when I was younger. I was in the Boy Scouts program and got an Eagle Scout, and probably like many of you, and there we had this leader who was like a drill sergeant. So we were 12, 13 year old boys, and we went on these camp outs. And he would line us up before we went to the campground. He said, boys, you see that campground right there? I'm going, yes, sir, we do. Let me be clear. It will look better than we found it when we leave. Do you hear me? Yes, sir. And he was serious. He was so serious because we could not leave that campground until everything looked pristine. And he was our ride home anyway, so we weren't going to leave until he let us. But the thing was, that became our culture. And after a while, guess what he did? That looks great, boys, and guess what? Look at the campground over there. You see that one over there? Yes, we do, sir. Now go make that look better than we found it. But, sir, we didn't sleep there. We didn't stay there. He says, doesn't matter. I want them to know that Troop 952 was in the house. And he was serious. Because we couldn't leave until we make that. Pretty soon we started cleaning everything. Everything we saw. Right? And then he knew we got it. And he knew we got it. It's been more than 3 decades since I've seen this man. And I can still hear his voice in my mind. And guess what? He's helped me with my cause. Because here's what he's saying to me. Thomas, you leave people better than you found. That's my cause. I must leave people better than I found them. If that's not involved, I'm not interested. Everything I do. Well, I did this study thing. There was how people feel around you. The study was this. In the restaurant business, we
there was a magazine to subscribe to, and it was called Restaurant Success Magazine. I didn't read all the articles, but one of those articles was worth 10 subscriptions, and it said, why did they come back? Why did they come back? And they took a survey, a state, a graph and study piece on why people would come back to your establishment. You can apply it to your family. You can apply it to any industry out there, really. Apply it to your homeschooling, obviously. So they took this graph chart, and guess what was number one? I mean, they took customer service, price of food, location, ambiance, customer experience, location. They put it onto a graph chart, but number one would dwarf everything else. So here's what it was. Customer experience. How people felt in your establishment. How they felt with you and around you. And so we went to work on this. So when people would come in, that's one thing we do is we'd learn their names, we'd learn their pizza, and then we'd put it out there. So we saw. So Bob got his people. If your name is Brian and you love pepperoni, Brian's back, put out a fresh pepperoni, right? That sort of thing. And people would come back for that. They'd come back because we knew and we made them feel special and important. Sometimes we also allowed people never came back, but most of the time they stayed. So it was great. Just something else learning the pizza business. But what are you about? What is your cause? Do you leave people better than you found them? Here's another language of love. Love to pray always. Do you love to pray always? We're commanded to pray always. But do you love to pray always? Elevated? In the pizza business, we were constantly getting applications for work. Every week, it seemed like. I'd have somebody else come in, hey, do you need work? But the thing is, I never needed work, meaning I never needed new employees. I had an amazing staff, and so I would take applications, so this stack of applications just got higher and higher, but my staff was so great, and I never needed anybody, hardly ever. Not only that, my staff would come and talk to me, and they would say, hey, Thomas, if you ever need someone, my brother, sister, cousin, friend, you know, they're looking for work, let me know. And I said, you know, that's great, but our team is great right now, and we never needed anybody else. Well, the day came when I absolutely needed someone. Absolutely needed someone, a key employee, moved, transitioned onto something else. And I thought, this is going to be so easy. I have a stack of applications this high in my office. I'll have somebody in 5 minutes. So I went in the office, and I started calling application after application after application after application after application after, you get the idea. Nobody wanted to work all of a sudden, right? And I only had a few people on the clock at that time, so I went and I said, hey, you remember you said your brother, sister, cousin, friend, whoever wanted a job, they still need work? No, they found something. Nobody knew anybody that needed work. Now, I'm frustrated. In my frustration, I go back into my office and I close the door, and that's when I pray. Lord, you know I need somebody. What's going on? And I felt like the Spirit was telling me, Thomas, why didn't you ask me in the first place? And I sort of felt repentive. I did, and I was in the right space then. I said, what should I do? And I felt like the Lord said, go ask Norma. That simple. Go ask Norma. Norma was my last chance. She was out there cleaning the dining room. She was the last person I hadn't asked yet. She was cleaning some tables, and I went out to Norma and I said, Norma, you know so-and-so just transitioned to something else. Do you possibly know anybody else? Know someone that needs work right now? I thought she was going to kiss me. She said, really? Really? I said, yeah. She's my sister-in-law, she said, Rosalina. They need work desperately. They need work right now. If they don't get work, she's going to lose her apartment. They're going to get evicted. These sorts of things. I said, great. Give her a call. Have her come down there. Within 30 minutes, Rosalina, Norma's sister-in-law, was at the all-you-can-eat pizza, pasta, garlic, dessert, pizza, salad business for $2.90, dressed up like she was interviewing for the Ritz-Carlton. I mean, this is a pizza buffet. Nobody's ever looked like this. But she looked wonderful. I sat down. I knew she only spoke Spanish, so I conducted the interview in Spanish. And she was a wonderful fit. A wonderful fit. And I was so grateful. And then after the interview and everything worked out, she said, I just have to ask something. I said, go ahead, Rosalina, what's your question? She said, how do you speak Spanish? I said, what? I don't look like I speak Spanish? I wasn't offended by that, right? I get it all the time.
And she says, no, you don't look like you speak Spanish. I said, well, I had some Books of Mormon up on my shelf. And I took one down, and I said, well, it's because of this book. And I turned it over, and I showed the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on the back. And she goes, and then she starts to cry. And I didn't realize my interviews were so emotional. And I said, what's going on? She said, no. She's like, how is this happening? She's speaking fast and fast. How is this happening? How am I here? I just have to thank you, God. Thank you, God. I'm like, Rosalina, can you help me understand what's going on? She says, Your people were in my house last night. The little boys with the tags. Right? And if missionaries are over there, I have to apologize to them. She called you little boys. Right? Little guys, I think. Little guys with the tags. They were in my home last night. I said, really? And she said, we were explaining to them that if we don't get work soon, we're going to be evicted from our apartment, things like that. And one of them pointed at me and said, Rosalina, I promise you, in the name of Jesus Christ, somebody will call you for work within 24 hours. Trust God. And there she was. Less than 24 hours. I don't know who this little guy is, this little missionary. Maybe God will grant that to me one day and I'll squeeze them. Because I'll say, thank you for being so bold to promise something and know that when you do so, in the name of the Lord, that He fulfills His promise. Does it make sense why none of the applications worked out? So, can we flip it? Were they actually working out? Can you see that? That when you think something isn't working out, God is working it out. Do you see that? However you need to see that. That God is always looking for ways to manifest His mighty hand in your life. Always. Tomorrow morning I'm going to talk to the youth about Romans 8:28, how everything always works out for our good, that everything is happening for you. Everything. Can you see it that way? Right? Your language is the window, how you see life. I see life that everything always works out for our good. I mean, if you called my cell phone and got my voice message, they would say, hey, this is Thomas, I'm so excited to speak with you, and everything always works out for our good. My voice message says that. We say that as a family every single morning, in unison, as an affirmation. You know what's great about that? About my voice message deal? Negative people stop leaving me messages. Like, they don't even feel welcome. It's wonderful. Right? Only love here. Well, can you love to pray a little more always? Even when everything looks perfect, everything is designed, everything is put together just right. Can you pray even then? I'm getting in the car, it looks like we know where we're going, I know the directions, all these sorts of things. Can you pray then? Oh, it's just a typical day at home, school, right? We're doing some activities, things like that. Can you pray then? Can you pray more always? And now in 37:37, it counsels us. It says, counsel with the Lord in all thy doings. I love this word. It encompasses everything. Not sometimes, not some things on Thursday afternoons. In all thy doings. And what's the promise? And He will direct thee for good. I want to be directed for good. Counsel with the Lord. Where can you amp that up? Think of that right now. Where is a space that you are not inserting a prayer so the Lord can consecrate your performance? Well, just a few lessons from the pizza business. There's some love language filters. And it's easy to recognize because I told you that the mind is a filter before we speak. It's, the word is the canon. The word is life and death is in the tongue. We can have a filter before we speak. And here's a few of them to consider. Before you speak, ask yourself before speaking, will my words be helpful or hurtful? Will my words make the situation better or worse? Will my words be encouraging or discouraging? Again, whether people are present or not. When I'm speaking about another son or daughter of God, will my words be inspiring or deflating? And if you just ask one of those questions, I'm confident you'll come out with a positive. See, the Navy SEALs, I learned from them, when I was speaking to them a few
a short while ago, they have a system, a Navy SEAL. Now you think about, these are some of the most elite soldiers on the planet. You know, a Navy SEAL, you may or may not know, that their training is such designed, I believe that if you don't die in the training, you become a Navy SEAL. So, but they said, we have a filter. Sometimes they are in hostile situations. And they said, before we speak, here's our filter. We stop, listen, pause, respond. Stop, listen, pause, then respond. They call it SLPR. We stop, listen, take it all in. We pause, think, is this going to be helpful or hurtful, encouraging or discouraging, better or worse, and then they respond. Because they know that's the trigger. Very interesting. So, words can describe how we feel. They can. What have you heard before? Has anybody ever said or heard this word? Words just can't describe how great you are. Words can't describe. Who's ever heard this? Who's ever said this, right? So it was Valentine's Day a little while ago, and I was writing my wife a love letter. And I'd written this book, as you know, and I started out this letter with, words can't describe how I feel about you. You know what I mean? On Valentine's. And I started going, like, seriously? I wrote a book on this thing. Right? And it's like and that was just going to be it. Love you. Happy Valentine's Day. Right? How sad. Because I recognize they can describe. In the moment I chanted, oh, erase, erase, erase. Words can describe. And my crew said, now let's get into it. Because the moment I said can't, shut off. Everything was, it's like a cop-out. And I changed it to words can describe, and I'm going to share this personal letter with you, with her permission. Yeah. There's been so many. She says, I don't remember what that one said. I said, dear Kimberly, words can describe how much I love you. When I see anything beautiful, anything lovely, anything precious, anything that takes my breath away, and anything that makes the world stand still, I think of you and how much I love you. When I smell the sweet scent of a flower, the mesmerizing aroma of a fresh loaf of bread baking, and a blissful rainfall activating nature's garden fresh air, I think of you and how much I love you. When I feel joyful inside, excitement for life and another incredible day, living life as an adventure, we're living on the road at this time, and the enchantment of a spontaneous surprise, I think of you and how much I love you. When I hug one of our precious daughters, hold you close and dry your happy tears, kiss your tender lips, and hold your beautiful hand that fits perfectly in mine forever, I'm all consumed with thoughts of you and how much I love you. Our hearts have been knit together since the beginning of time and will be forever. That and 1,000 more things make me think of you and how much I love you. Because I said I can, right? All right, if someone wants that, you can come take a picture, maybe. But isn't it interesting, the moment I said I can't, you see, words can describe. There's so much love that is inside of you that you can describe to your children. How was your day? Good. Right? Why? Love you. Why? Explain why you love them. Get deeper. It takes time, but it's worth the effort. It is so worth the effort. Because if you're saying it's hard to say what I love, I would say, aye, aye, Captain. Is that what you want? Do you want it to be hard? No, I want it to be beautiful. Then make it and change it to it's worth the effort. You can do this. You can do this. Now, I'll end with this. The Lord and the world has really given us opportunity to step up our love. Because there are people making, I would say, billions of dollars out there with dividing love. Dividing people, dividing families, dividing communities. Think about political situations, perhaps. In 2016, there was a presidential election. And for whatever reason on this time, I felt like it was amplified the division in our country. You may relate to this. There was a presidential election in 2016, and it was just amplified. All of a sudden, you weren't just one political party that you decided to support. You were enemies. And the language around it, the social media around it, was absolutely horrific. Oftentimes what I do at this time is a thought or a tune, or how can I make my world a better place? And I went to the piano, and some words came to me, and I expressed them, and I started writing a little tune. And the words went like this: at the end of the day, or when the clouds they fade away, and the stars they paint the perfect picture, why? And our eyes gaze above, and you know we can't help but feel His love. And though our lives may be low, we still hold our heads up high. Just remember, we're all looking up at the same sky. You can have your belief, you can have your support in whatever situation you want, be it political or otherwise. But remember, at the end of the day, we're all looking up at the same sky. Let's come together. Let's remember whose we are. Let's remember where we came from. Well, I wrote that little tune, that little chorus, in 2016. And that was just a little jingle. In 2020, there was another presidential election. And as it amplified by 1,000%. Does it feel like that? Like it was just amplified the division in our country and the world, because our country drives a lot of factors. Like the world was getting divided. And I thought, I've got to put some more weight on this song. And so I wrote some more verses and things like that. And then my wife came to me and she said, Thomas, let's finish a song. Let's finish that song. Because you should know I have a lot of little jingles, a lot of little starters. But she said, let's finish one. What about that one that you started? He says, what if we spend every Monday evening family nights just working on Daddy's song? And we'd gather around the piano and they helped me put some things together and some harmony. And we wrapped up some of the verses and put a bridge in it and things like that. And then we had a complete song because of my family. So it was always meant to be a group effort. And recently I went to a professional recording studio and recorded it. And I'm going to play that for you. It's on YouTube. It's called Looking Up at the Same Sky. You feel whatever you're supposed to feel. Here it is. There was never a time when the world needed it. Wouldn't you agree? It's now. So you can go on YouTube, see that, share that, whatever fits you, but essentially that love that we're talking about, that pure love and language of love, comes from the Savior. And when you speak the language of love and it's His, it will always work. It will always work. And I say that in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.